What's up, basketball fans? Welcome to another live edition of the NBA Island. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. No guest today. We're just running the duo. Corey, what's up, bro?
Feeling good. The second round's been decided. We know who we're seeing today, and we get Warriors Rockets.
Yeah, and Warriors, I mean, like, going to the season, this is what a lot of us anticipated. You know, we didn't maybe think Houston had as good a chance as last year, but at this point, it feels about the same as last year in terms of the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, the Avengers run it back, so Houston's running it back. It's all about running it back.
I just saw a meme that had Iron Man. I know I'm not spoiling anything. I'm just saying Iron Man is James Harden and Thanos is Steph Curry. So if we could see some interaction like that, that'd be pretty fun. Obviously, Avengers Endgame just dropped. We're actually going to be dropping a pod on that later tonight, probably dropping the AM. But back to basketball. As always, check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. But getting into Houston and Golden State, Corey, hit me with your top storylines.
I mean, the top storyline, first off, is the fact that this was the Western Conference Finals last year. The Rockets were up 3-2. It looked like they had a serious chance of winning and going to the NBA Finals. The Chris Paul injury, Trevor Ariza not being able to hit threes. I mean, the team not being able to hit threes. They were like 0 for 25 at one point in that game.
27 missed straight threes.
Yeah, exactly. Which you don't see often. But I mean, you saw it last night in Denver and San Antonio. But you know, so it's that run it back narrative. And then for the Warriors, it's they just got out of a really tough six-game series, which none of us really expected. It wasn't easy getting past the Clippers. Curry and Klay both have sprained ankles. How does that play a factor? Because we know Curry's had ankle issues in the past. Klay's not normally a banged up one. I mean, Kevin Durant looked fantastic in game six with the 50 points. Can they continue to build for this three-peat? And then also, you know, what does this mean for both sides? You know, if Houston doesn't get it done this year, do you think about trying to move some players? Because obviously they got a lot of money tied up. Chris Paul is older. How can they reconfigure the roster? And then for the Warriors, God forbid they lose, what happens to that team with Durant obviously being a free agent, Thompson being a free agent? So what storylines you got?
I mean, I think legacy is the biggest storyline in the entire series, like you just touched on. I think you're running it back again. Last year, you know, we thought Houston had a chance and Chris Paul doesn't get hurt. They probably win that series. And the whole history of the NBA has probably changed because this Golden State team's not here. DeMarcus Cousins is somewhere else. Kevin Durant might have been somewhere else. So I think going into it, you look at it, I think Golden State has a lot more to lose in this series because from Houston's perspective, they're not expected to win. You know, it would be a major boost for them. I'll get to them in a sec. But if Golden State were to lose, Kevin Durant's a lock to leave. You could possibly lose Klay Thompson. This is also hurting the legacy of that team that is super stacked to lose in the second round. If you lose in the Western Conference Finals, hey, it's the Western Conference Finals. But the second round of the playoffs with a team like this with a possibility to win a third championship with Kevin Durant being there is huge. So that would be detrimental to the legacy of all those players, especially being assembled. And it wouldn't be the first time Steph and Klay and Draymond lost to a team that was less talented than them. Then you look at the Houston perspective. Yeah, they do have something to lose, but they have a lot more to gain. I think from Chris Paul, James Harden perspective, this could literally boost them on the all-time list, not just like one or two spots, but like 10 plus spots, because the biggest hate on Chris Paul and James Harden is postseason. You know, Chris Paul, obviously a lot of his injuries, but if they were to beat Golden State and finish the deal and win a championship, now all of a sudden the conversation begins. Chris Paul, best point guard of all time. James Harden now enters the conversation against Kobe and Dwayne Wade. Obviously has more to do, but without the championship, you don't really get in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, this arguably, if the Houston Rockets win this series, it could be maybe one of the greatest seasons we've seen from a player in James Harden. True. Because, you know, the Houston Rockets were 14th at one point in time in the Western Conference. They got all the way up to home court advantage in the Western Conference. Then they were meeting up with the team that beat them last year. If they were to get past them, then James Harden's legacy, you know, the fact that, as Mike D'Antoni said the other day, maybe he should be most improved player because he boosted up his points per game. So I think James Harden's legacy especially could be really defined by this moment. Of course, like you mentioned, Chris Paul, we know the injury history. He's just trying to play to kind of prove everybody wrong because the narrative around Chris Paul is he's never healthy when it comes to playoff. They can never win the big game.
And I think a lot is too, is like going to the season, you know, I mentioned earlier, like we wanted to see this matchup again, but Houston lost a lot of pieces that contributed last year. Trevor Ariza, Bob Mute, you know, different players came in like Austin Rivers, Kenneth Faried, House. So now we're looking at these guys in here and now they're able to make the jump. And a lot of people are like, oh, can James Harden be better than last year? I don't think so. And he took his game to another whole level. So I think that's a major storyline. And you talked about just all the different stuff in terms of injuries, you know, not only Chris Paul, but now Steph being banged up, Clay being banged up. And we know Houston loves to get their ISOs and they'll get the matchup they want. They'll attack Clay and Steph in the first game. And it's something that can kind of bother them the rest of the series. So I'm really interested in seeing how they look from an athletic perspective to start this series, because there's only so much you can do if your ankle's banged up.
Yeah, and I mean, for the Klay Thompson ankle injury, to me, it's not even necessarily you're gonna miss him on the offensive side of the ball. It's how good of a defender can he be on a bum ankle? You know, can he be, because he is their best perimeter defender. I mean, you can make the case that Durant is, because Durant's got such great length. But realistically, Klay is their most important perimeter defender. So if he can't be laterally quick and stay with either Harden or Chris Paul, depending on who he's guarding, then that could be a serious issue for them.
Yeah, and they're just going to keep attacking. You know, James Harden's going to go after whoever, and if they don't have one of their best defenders, it's going to be on the team to really step up. And I think another storyline we didn't even touch on is there's some juice in the series. You know, these teams don't love each other. They've played a lot of great matchups going all the way back to last year's regular season, then in the playoffs, then this year's regular season. I think there's a little bit of hate there, and we know the guys are trying to prove a point going against each other. It's like you have Kevin Durant, who's arguably playing like the best player in the NBA right now, and then you have James Harden, who's coming for that top spot as well, putting up another MVP-type season. Then Chris Paul, like we mentioned, doesn't want to be forgotten. Steph's looking to have a big postseason run to help his legacy. And Clay's just trying to do his thing as always. And Draymond's been really good too. Like, I mean, he's probably like an underlying factor in the series we'll get to.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a great point about their relationship at this point in time between these two franchises. Because I think that was sort of what I saw last round against the Clippers, the fact that the Clippers play with more edge, with more of a chip, with more desire than I saw from the Warriors. And this Rockets team, I mean, this is the only team they wanted to see in the playoffs. As Mike D'Antoni said in the once press conference, he's like, well, run it back. You know, this is what we wanted.
Nervous like, laugh.
Yeah, the nervousest laugh of all. But like, this is what they want. Like, this is a team that they feel like they can beat. They feel like they are the better team because of how they played last year. So they have more of an edge and more of a desire for this. And we've seen the Warriors be lackadaisical. Do the Warriors match the energy that the Rockets are bound to bring?
Do you think they benefited from playing a Clippers team in round one that was scrappy and edgy and kind of pushed them a little bit before this Houston series, instead of they played, let's say, San Antonio or OKC or even like Portland? I mean, OKC probably would have played a little bit better, but they weren't great in the first round either.
I think I would have said it would have been good for them if they didn't suffer injuries. I think if they were fully healthy and they had that tough first round matchup, I think that definitely plays in their factor for them. It was more like a wake up call. Like, wow, guys, we really got to step it up. But the fact that like it was a wake up call, but then you also got two of your main guys banged up. It
kind of like six
in game six. I think it kind of like just negates it. I'm trying negates it. So I think it would have been good. I think it's good for Durant. I think Durant, especially after, you know, the first two games where everyone was like, oh, Pat Bev is, you know, really annoying Durant. Durant turned it on those last two games, especially. He was an absolute force. I think it's really good from Durant's perspective because it feels like he's actually got some more juice. But it's bad for the side that, you know, obviously Curry and Clay are banged up.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, because Trevor Ariza saw a lot of time on Kevin Durant last year, and they don't really have a similar body to throw at him. Daniel House has a little bit more size, like in terms of length, but P.J. Tucker's going to spend some time on him. They're going to have to get really creative if Durant is playing like that. But we saw last year in the Western Conference Finals that Durant having really big games did not always lead to Golden State winning the game. And that could be the case again this year. They might be like, all right, KD's going to drop 40 or 50, but hey, we're going to keep Steph and Clay quiet, and they're not going to really impact the game as much. And then when it gets late in the game, they go to ISO possessions. He misses a few. We end up winning.
Yeah, I don't remember what game we watched together last year. Was it game five or game six? I know we watched the late game, but either way, it was Durant being extremely ISO and kind of disrupting the offense. I mean, he was getting buckets and everything else, but like you mentioned, there's too much of those times where Durant takes it on himself and he disrupts the flow of the offense. And realistically, that's what Houston wants to do. You want Durant to cut down the ball movement and to try and go into ISO. Granted, he's going to get his point. You're going to have to stop the other guys, but that's the ideal situation, is you want those guys to play more of an isolation basketball.
And if he's shooting over 50%, then it's like a kind of neglects.
We're both having trouble on that word.
You threw me off. but I think that's something to keep an eye on, honestly. And then obviously getting to matchups. It's not as much individual matchups in this series. And I think a lot of the series you look at, other than maybe Philadelphia and Toronto, a lot of it's like team-based. And I think you're looking at Houston's defense versus Steph Curry, Houston's defense versus Kevin Durant. And that's kind of what the matchups are. It's not as much of, hey, Steph Curry versus Chris Paul. It's more of like the team versus X player.
Yeah, I mean, because both of these teams, their defense relies on switching so heavily. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to see a lot of, you know, strict matchups because these teams don't play like that. They obviously play a lot of switches. And I think the defensive schemes against those players are huge. I'm also looking at the matchup between the bench units. Mm-hmm. The Golden State Warriors bench I mean, you know, Iggy is okay, but those guys have finally taken a step back. Livingston and Iggy, they're not who they once were. Quinn Cook is really spotty. Kayvon Looney's been solid, but the bench for the Warriors is probably their biggest weakness this season compared to years past. Whereas the Warriors, the Rockets, they have some nice pieces. Daniel House, is he starting now or no?
I think they kind of are going to switch it up depending on your matchup they like.
Right. But either way, Daniel House, Austin River, those guys have been solid contributors for their bench unit. So how do the benches match up? Because I think that's going to be an underlying X factor, especially with the Warriors having some injuries to Curry and Clay. Can the bench unit step up, like guys like Quinn Cook?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens with the bench. I think Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston both still have their moments. It's just like, do you have to depend on them a lot throughout the series? Obviously, Golden State just started Livingston to finish off that series against the Clippers. Will they go that way again? It'll be interesting. They prefer to kind of play small. Andrew Bogut's impact, and obviously DeMarcus Cousins not coming back for the series is, you know, I think that could have went either way. I think it could have been a positive or it could have been a negative depending on matchup. So I'm really intrigued by that. And just, you know, in terms of like role guys kind of stepping up, and I think it's almost like they need Eric Gordon to be a starter slash fringe all-star in this series to win, because they just have to match the talent that's going on in Golden State. If they're all healthy and playing well, they need that third piece or fourth piece, depending on what you consider Clint Capella.
I would say if the Rockets were to win this series, Eric Gordon has to shoot probably right around 40% from three this series. He's got to be electric from deep. Because obviously, as we mentioned, they do rely on a three-point shot, but their best three-point shooters are James Harden and Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon's been extremely spotty. We talked about his struggles in the middle of the season. He just wasn't getting it done. So how does he factor into this future upcoming series today?
Yeah, I agree. And kind of getting to X factors, I think that's a guy that we've talked about him being an X factor for about 4 months now. Like it's been a while. That's going to be a major impact in the series. And you brought this up before, missing all those three pointers at the end of that series last year in the Western Conference Finals. 3-point shooting is going to be a huge factor because it's going to depend on how you can double team certain guys. There's guys on both teams that are going to need double teams. James Harden, Kevin Durant, whoever it may be, are the other guys going to knock down their open shots?
Yeah, I mean, I think an X factor, I mean, obviously the Warriors aren't going to play the type of defense that the Jazz played on James Harden. But I was looking at the shooting numbers for James Harden. He only shot 37% from the field last series, 35% on two-pointers, 40% on three-pointers, which is still his area of the game. But are you worried at all for the fact that once again in the playoffs he struggles shooting-wise, or do you think it's just credit to the fact that the Utah Jazz are a better defensive team?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Utah's defense definitely is going to throw you off because it's very unique and that's not something you're going to see. And they force him to take his least efficient shot and being the floater. I wouldn't be surprised if Golden State did a little once in a while just to throw him off. But I also think it was James Harden missing shots that he can make. You know, it wasn't just like, hey, Utah's defense is amazing. It's like you also miss shots. But also, you know, Golden State has nobody in comparison to Rudy Gobert. And Gobert definitely impacted those floaters and those layups in the paint. The paint's not going to be clogged like it was against Utah. Like, James Harden can finish over Draymond. We saw that last year when he dunked on him.
Yeah, no, it's a good point.
So
when he hit that three-pointer over him in the regular season.
Yeah, so the step-back three is going to be really interesting to see how Golden State defends that, because if he gets going from the step-back, it's almost impossible to defend unless you play that weird defense where you're playing behind him or to his side.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what happens. I also think they're going to need Chris Paul to be big because it's too much to ask James Harden alone to beat a team like Golden State. It's not Utah. It's not San Antonio. It's not Denver. It's not Portland. It's not OKC. It's Golden State, the best team in the league.
Well, and this is why you got Chris Paul, right? You got Chris Paul for this series in mind. This is why you gave him that max contract to keep him long term. And, you know, if you're Chris Paul, you have a lot to – I think Chris Paul, of more than anyone on the Rockets, probably has the most to gain in this series because of how last year ended for him.
Yeah.
This is a series where you really want him to show up. And honestly, he could take advantage early with Curry being banged up. And we know how their history has been, even from the time when he was with the Clippers, and Curry's put him in some highlights. This could be a moment for James Harden to kind of get his revenge.
Yeah, and I mean, last year we saw Chris Paul hit him with a shimmy, and that was beautiful.
Yeah,
So I think there's going to be a couple things rebounding-wise. I think Houston's going to have to be better in the series. Last year we saw them be pretty scrappy and get some offensive rebounds, a guy like P.J. Tucker. They didn't necessarily win the boards battle against Utah, so that's going to have to change against Golden State, especially if they play small. Another guy we didn't really talk about who could play a major factor is Clint Capella.
I was just thinking about him.
So what are your thoughts on how he can impact this series?
I mean, offensively, there's, you know, Draymond is probably going to get matched up because you're going to see Golden State go small. Bogut is a big body, but Capella offensively needs to be huge. He's got to be a consistent offensive threat. He's got to be better on the offensive glass. I worry about him defensively because you know the Warriors are going to attack him. The Warriors are going to pull him out of the paint. They're going to isolate on him, and they're going to try and get by him and beat him. So Capella is the biggest X factor on can he be a consistent offensive threat and can he not be a liability? Because if the Rockets have to go small and play, let's say, PJ Tucker at the five, which they have done in the past, I don't think that's in favor of them this year compared to last year.
Especially if Durant's just dominating because they don't have anybody they can really match up on him at all.
Yeah,
I'm interested in Capella. He's taken some strides this year. Obviously, a little injury messed with him a bit. But his on-ball defense in terms of when he gets switched is going to be huge. We saw a couple plays last year where he shut down Steph, but then later in the series, they were able to expose him more. If he's going to be on the floor and Golden State's going to play small, he needs to dominate the boards. Like, he just needs to go out there and just make them work. Draymond's a great player, but he doesn't have the size or the length to match up with Clint Capella if he's attacking the boards. And it's also going to be the oops, you know, from Chris Paul and James Harden. That's an area you can impact them. As good a position you can get, sometimes if you're just a bigger guy, you're going to go up and finish it.
Yeah, I mean, the entire Rockets offense kind of is regulated by the fact that we're going to give oops, download a Capella, then we're going to space the floor by having that threat to shoot more threes. And if the Warriors are neutralizing the lobs and neutralizing Capella around the rim, it changes the entire Rockets offense, and they really can't afford that. The Rockets have to be able to play their game if they're going to win this series.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see what happens in terms of just the matchups and the X factors. And just like across the board, there's so many things to kind of keep an eye on, and just like health. And you mentioned like Harden shooting. Like, if he shoots well, it's going to be a major factor in the series if he's knocking on the step back, because the entire defense has to adapt. If he's not, it's going to put a lot of pressure on other Houston players to create and make their own shot and score the basketball. And I think another guy who's like, it's weird to say he's an X factor, but I think Austin Rivers could have some type of impact in the series.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a decently nice boost for them. The shooting splits aren't great. It's not like he's a great offensive threat. But the fact of the matter is, he can create his own shot off the dribble. I think he's had decent success against the Warriors in the past, at least some nice moments when he was with the Clippers. But how can he play a factor? Because Chris Paul does need rest once in a while. You don't want to happen what happened last year. The fact that Chris Paul all of a sudden had a boost in minutes, was playing like 37 minutes per game. You don't want to take the risk of having, I mean, granted, it's the playoffs, so those guys are going to be playing more minutes than usual, but you don't want to overuse Chris Paul just in case, because it just feels like that's when he breaks down, is when you up his minutes and he's playing above his normal minute limit.
Yeah, and I mean, Austin Rivers is a type that pretty much has like a hot or cold game. It's not really much of an in-between. It's like, all right, he's really good today or he's not good today. He's missing a whole bunch of shots. I think another guy, Kenneth Reed, can he have an impact in the series coming off the bench? Are they going to kind of expose him defensively, or he's going to have his impact on the board just being aggressive and attacking? We talked about Daniel House. I think he's another guy you just got to really keep an eye on, because he could have a big series because he provides them with just that like perfect type of role player.
Definitely. Daniel House, especially because he was on the Warriors too. So he has a little bit of edge on himself too, for the, you know, they got rid of me and look what I can provide for this team.
And also, I think you consider a guy like Gerald Green is similar to Austin Rivers, where he just has like games where he's really good and knocks down a ton of shots, and other games where he's just like 0-6.
Yeah. I think for the Rockets, most importantly, you got to have James Harden be James Harden first. So that's the most important thing. Chris Paul play right around where we know Chris Paul can play. And then you need to have Capella be solid, but you need to have one or two role players that you don't expect pop off, whether it's House, whether it's Eric Gordon, whether it's Austin Rivers, Kenneth Fareed. You have to have guys who don't normally have big games perform, especially against the Warriors. I think Kenneth Fareed, I think, is an interesting guy in this series, because if the Warriors go small, Kenneth Fareed actually matches up better with them. You know, if DeMarcus Cousins in there, it might be a different story, but this is the kind of a match where Fareed can actually have a huge impact because of the size that the Warriors don't have.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I might say Clint Capella, though, is still probably a better on-ball defender than Kenneth Fareed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because Kenneth Fareed, like, he has, like, the small ball and the athleticism to run the floor and, like, has, you know, he's faster than Capella, but his defensive engagement and just, like, the fundamentals he has, I don't think is up to Capella's level. But he also can play up to another level because he doesn't always play at his best. Yeah. Now, moving to Golden State side, I think Kevon Looney is an interesting guy. We saw him play a lot of minutes last year. He got switched on to James Harden a lot, and I think he did a pretty good job. He didn't shut him down, but for the guy at his size, the work that he did, I thought it was pretty good. And I thought he was actually going to get the contract from somebody else, but Golden State got him really cheap.
Yeah, I mean, Iggy made a reference to it recently, that Kevon Looney deserves all the money he's probably going to get this offseason. He's crucial. I think his on-ball defense, his on-ball defense has been better this year. I think he's a lot more confident. He got stronger this past offseason. And without DeMarcus Cousins, you know, you need a guy who's going to be quicker. Like, yeah, Andrew Bogut is nice for the fact that he's a physical center and he can be tougher and body you up. But Kevon Looney is way better than Bogut at this stage of their careers. He's just a little bit quicker. He can defend more on the perimeter. Bogut is an issue for the Warriors if he's being dragged out of the paint because he is slow as molasses at this point of his career.
Yeah, Houston would definitely try to expose him a lot in a pick-and-roll situation. But I think also you look at Bogut, he provides some of the other stuff in terms of like screening, passing, and things along those lines. But looking at Golden State's bench, I think what you brought up earlier is going to be a major factor of like who's going to step up and knock down shots coming off the bench, or is it going to be so dependent on the starters and that Steve Kerr's just going to have to stagger the minutes and it's going to have to be two of the four guys out there at all times so they at least can maintain competence offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're definitely going to see a boost in minutes, especially maybe early on. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Durant play like 45 minutes today, especially if Curry and Clay are banged up. You might not be able to afford having Durant rest and keeping his offense off the floor. Quinn Cook is a guy I'm really interested to see because he can play a little bit of the two guard if they go small. He can play the one, obviously. Can he be an effective three-point threat? They're going to need him to be at his best, especially while Curry and Clay are not 100%. So I know the Clay sprained ankle is a lot worse than Curry's. I heard Kerr say that they're actually concerned about Clay's sprain because it was far worse than they realized after the game. So that could be a factor.
You know, it doesn't feel as bad. Then all of a sudden you get home and you look at it and that thing is like a softball. So yeah. Something to keep an eye on for sure. Now getting kind of to the predictions, unless there's any X factors or matchups you want to touch on before we move on.
I mean, I think an X factor would be Iggy. I think Iggy's kind of him being the sixth man, him having, as you mentioned before, he's still got something in the tank. He's had moments and flashes.
Missed time last year. He missed a lot of the series last year.
Yeah, he didn't play until late game five or game six. I think he missed the first bunch of the games. Yeah.
And I believe Steve Kerr said the series would have been over in like five if Iguodala would have played. So I think that also gives Houston a little bit more of a chip and a little pressure on him in a sense. Not too much because he's a vet, but.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing about Iggy is, how effective can he be? Because he's been a terrible three-point shooter this year. Now, granted, he's never been a very good three-point shooter. Well, this is the first time with the Warriors where we've really seen a dip for the fact that I think he shot 32% this year from three, maybe even worse. And in the playoffs, it might even be far lower than that. And obviously, he struggled at the free throw line. So what kind of performance can they get from Iggy? Because I think Iggy's going to be critical for them.
Yeah, it's true. And he provides, he put some really good defense on Lou Williams at certain points in the last series. Can he put the clamps on, James Harden or Chris Paul, or at least slow them down, or even somebody like Eric Gordon? So Iguodala is a guy to always keep an eye on because of the ability he brings. But prediction-wise, what are you rolling with?
I don't even feel like I feel confident in any prediction I'm going to give. But I'm going with Warriors in seven. I think this is a seven-game series. I think the Warriors get the advantage because of home court. And I don't even feel confident saying that because they lost two games to the Clippers at home. But
One was a complete outlier, though, because they were up 31, and it's just like – I think they just kind of like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. We're going to win
the game. Five was bad, though. That is a really interesting loss at home for that Warriors team. But I'm going with the Warriors in seven. I'm not going against the Warriors until I see them lose at this point. Like, it's just stupid to bet against the back-to-back champions going for a three-peat when they have Durant, Curry, and Clay. But I will say I do think this is it. This run of the dynasty is over. I don't think they go for four in a row. I think they'll still be good, but I think this is also like the kind of the last hoorah for the Warriors.
Interesting take. I could definitely see it. I wouldn't be surprised if they still have some – I don't want to say as they won't be as dominant, but if they maintain Steph, Clay, and Draymond and they're able to add – some at least above average starter, they might be able to maintain contender status. It just won't be in the dominant fashion that we just witnessed over the last few seasons. I mean, also, we're just assuming Kevin Durant's going to leave. There is a possibility that he does stay. Like, I think people are not understanding, like, KD could actually stay in Golden State. He doesn't hate Golden State.
No, he doesn't hate Golden State. And when you win, if you win back-to-back-to-back titles, it's almost idiotic to leave because who leaves a situation like that where you just won three? It's not like you're losing Curry. Curry's in the prime of his career. It's not like, Clay, I don't think Clay will leave. I think Clay and Curry are going to be together for the rest of their careers. At least that's just how I feel. So I think you're right for the point that it's definitely not a sure thing Durant leaves, but we're all just looking into the fact where, the Draymond and Durant spat earlier this year, the fact that there's been a ton of interviews where Durant just looks like he hates everybody on the team. There's just like underlying chemistry issues that we kind of like pick apart as media guys, but
Yeah, I think also there's a scenario where Kevin Durant stays and they trade Draymond Green. Like, I think that is in play. I don't think it's a guarantee or anything, but if KD came back and said, you know what, I'll stay with Golden State, but get rid of this Draymond dude.
Honestly, and I wouldn't be shocked, because you saw the media clip the other day where Steve Kerr was like, yo, turn the music down, I want to be able to hear press. Yeah. And then Draymond wanted up, and Kerr was like, yeah, what I say doesn't matter. Like, there's just like a weird tension, and it almost feels like it is surrounding Draymond Green. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was a factor. Maybe even not just by Durant, but guys of the members, you know, like Kerr saying, we got to get rid of Draymond if you want to sustain this run.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. Draymond's a really good player, but he is also kind of an asshole. And there's been other situations where it looks like Steve Kerr, you could read his lips. You know, I'm so sick of Draymond Green, all this stuff, you know, whatever. So, I mean, I'm not locking up KD leaving until I actually see it. Like, I'm leaning towards him leaving, but I see a possibility of him staying and like, oh, yeah, we want to win a fourth championship. Like, that's really big in history. Like, that's going to help you more than if you go to New York and then you don't win another chip, but you maybe get the Knicks back in the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you're looking at who you'd rather give money to, Draymond's probably the last guy you want to give a big contract to.
Yeah, and I think there's value for Draymond. Like, I know a lot of teams would love to get Draymond. I mean, I would love him on the Nets. He's an asshole. He gets under people's skin. He plays great defense. Obviously, the three-point shooting, the offensive game could improve, but I still think there's a lot of value in what he brings to a team, and he has that championship experience.
And as long as small ball is around, he's going to be the perfect kind of small ball five because of that defense you just mentioned.
Yeah, the versatility. I mean, he's still a defensive player of the year type candidate. It's not like he's, you know, falling off the cliff. It's just his offense that's been struggled this year.
And he was phenomenal in game six against the Clippers. That triple-double, like, I granted, you know, that team may have not, I mean, Durant had the eye-popping performance that you catch the eye to, but with Curry and Klay hobbled, Draymond was the second best player in that game six.
Yeah, and it says a lot. I mean, I think Draymond's a really good player, and obviously it'd be interesting to see him in another role. But to get to my prediction, I'm going to go with Golden State in seven as well. The really vanilla take here, it's pretty safe. It's just like, all right, Golden State's going to win. I'm not sure how many games, but seven will be the safest one to pick.
All right, so this is the next question, which normally you throw at me first, but I'll throw at you. What is the upset probability for the Rockets in this series?
So I'll do this. If Steph and Klay both miss one game each, which I think is possible, I would put this at 60% upset. If they both were to miss one game each, because that would be, unless they're both missing the same game, which I actually think would be really smart from Steve Kerr. If both guys are at like 75%, or let's say Clay's at 60%, Curry's at 70, I'd sit Klay for game one. Like, I need him. I need the ankle to be okay. Every basketball player in the history of basketball has had some type of ankle injury. It just always happens. You sprain your ankle, you land weird. It's just part of the game. So I would maybe consider resting Klay for game one, and that would help me later in the series. But I would give them – actually, let me cut back down to 50%. I think 50% if they miss two games. I think Kevin Durant's so good that he could boost them to another level. Without injuries, I put it at 33%.
I wasn't taking into account of anybody missing games, but for me, I'd probably say 45%. Because I think those guys probably play, but if, like you said, if they're 75% and they're not their full selves, how does the Rockets maybe attack Klay or attack Curry? Because Curry's not a great defender already as it is. And if he's a little bit hobbled and his lateral quickness is cut down, you know, James Harden, Chris Paul can exploit that because they're going to be switching on him. They did it a lot last year in this matchup. So I think I would say 45%.
45 with injury, and then what without injury?
Without injury is probably only like a 20% probability upset. If the Warriors are fully healthy, I think it's 20% chance. Cause I just don't think they match up well if Curry and Durant are at 100% in this series personally.
I also don't think that Curry and Klay will get to 100% in the series, similar to what we saw with Joel Embiid in, you know, the Nets series. And now it looks like in the Toronto series, doesn't look 100% either. So that could help Houston's chances. I think a lot's going to depend on if Houston were to win the series, it's going to have to be James Harden being an MVP type player. It's not going to be, he's not going to be able to have like a 40% shooting night and like 30% from three. It's going to have to be like 45% from the field and like high 30s from three.
Yeah. Like, I know they won game three against Utah when he shot 3-for-20 from the field. They're not winning a game against the Warriors where James Harden goes 3-for-20 from the field. It's not happening.
They, for most games, are going to need to have big performances unless Eric Gordon randomly catches fire and drops like 40. I don't think you can really expect 40 from Chris Paul at this age.
No, and he hasn't shown any glimpses of being that aggressive with the basketball at all this year, where he, you know, kind of takes over the offense himself. There's been moments where I saw against the Jazz series, he chucks up some terrible long twos. But yeah, he's definitely not dropping 40 plus.
I think Capella's the guy who could have a really big series that could maybe change the dynamic of what's going on, forcing them to play Bogut a little bit more, and then that would hurt them a little bit more defensively. So there's different areas. But series MVP.
Well, since I go with the Warriors, I'm going to say Kevin Durant. I just don't think there's a guy on the Rockets who matches up well against Kevin Durant. Like, yeah, PJ Tucker has the physicality to kind of disrupt Kevin Durant. But as we saw last round against the Clippers, you can even cover his entire face with your hand. He's still going to make a jump shot if he's on. So,
and you're going to hit him in the face and he still hits a shot.
Exactly. So I think for me, it's Durant as the MVP, especially with Curry and Klay Thompson being hobbled. I think Durant's going to be leaned on heavily, especially in these first few games, and that might already just put him in the conversation to be the MVP of the series if he has a huge, like, game one through three.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much been the MVP of the playoffs so far. Like, he's just been that dominant. He looks like the best player in the NBA right now. He looks better than – he's having a LeBron-type stretch in the postseason, and we really haven't seen other players do that. He's doing it a little bit different way, but he's so dominant right now that I don't know if you can do anything to stop him. I don't know if you saw the press conference with Lou Will and Pat Bev.
Yo,
they
that was
tried everything.
That was one of the greatest press conferences I've seen. It was just so real. Like, yo, you saw? We tried.
Then there's really anything you can do. There's a few guys in the league, and if you don't have them on your roster, like, you don't have Giannis, you don't have Kawhi, like, you're not really having an opportunity to slow down Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And even LeBron, like, LeBron isn't really slowing down Kevin Durant. It's going to have to be someone who's elite defensively and has the length.
Not at this age is LeBron a matchup for Kevin Durant. He's just not as laterally quick. And we know that LeBron took a step back in defense. The biggest issues to Durant defensively are in the East now. And that's, like you mentioned, Kawhi Leonard and Antetokounmpo are probably the two guys who can give him the most trouble. And more than likely, we might see one of those two guys in the NBA Finals against Kevin Durant.
Yeah, very true. We saw some really good basketball in that Toronto-Philadelphia game. And Kawhi, you know, I just said Kevin Durant's been the best player. Kawhi's right up there, though, too. Him, I think so far for me, the three best players, if I had to go right off the top of my head, would be KD, Kawhi, and Dame Lillard.
I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think this is actually the most dominating playoff stretch I've seen from Kawhi Leonard in his career. Even when he won the title in San Antonio, he was finals MVP. I don't feel like he was this dominant offensively. Like, granted, he's always been this good defensively, and we saw that again yesterday, but offensively, he looks like he's on another level, and he is in almost complete takeover mode. And, you know, having another 30 plus point night last night against Toronto completely made Jimmy Butler look like a fool, which was an X factor matchup we talked about before the series. And at this point in time, it looks like nobody can stop Kawhi.
Yeah. I think Kawhi really, for me, he picked up where he left off in that Golden State series. I think he was going to do that against Golden State. He had like 30 in the third quarter until Zaza Pachulia fucked his shit up. And now he's back to that level and he's just cooking guys. And you don't want to see him get confident like that, because it's just automatic. We talked about Kevin Durant hitting tough shots. Like, Kawhi hit a ton of tough shots, and like, Jimmy Butler's a really good defender. He doesn't necessarily have the size. That's why I think in game two, this is for another day, they'll probably go to Ben Simmons more.
Yeah. And also, what I stuck out yesterday watching that Toronto Philly game is the pressure that Kawhi put on the defense also led to a lot of wide open passes to guys like Danny Green and Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam, to the fact that he just controlled the entire tempo of the game, which is what, you know, guys like Durant and Kawhi Leonard can do.
Yeah, I was also impressed with Marc Gasol yesterday. I thought he played a really good game in terms
of... fantastic against Embiid. Embiid looked extremely uncomfortable. Embiid took a lot of two just questionable shots. I know there was a couple of times where he's in the paint and Gasol is just right up in him. He's just tossing it up. And it's like, bro, you're not going to make that.
And I'll be honest, like, he didn't get the same calls that he got in the last series.
Yep.
And, you know, Gasol's a more respectable defender than going up against Jared Allen, who's a 21-year-old, doesn't have much size. And we talked about Ed Davis being out. Hey, it's a major adjustment going up against someone who's 50 pounds lighter than you to someone who's maybe 10 pounds lighter than you.
And one thing I love, which we also talked about on the previous series, is that Serge Ibaka was exactly what I thought he was going to be. When Gasol came off the floor and they put in Ibaka, he got as physical as he could with Joel Embiid, and they made him extremely uncomfortable, because there was not a moment in time yesterday when Joel Embiid wasn't battling bodies with somebody who just was being extremely physical.
And I thought also, and not to just give all the credit to the bigs, I thought the help defense from Toronto, from being Kawhi, being on ball, the length he has to kind of help right away. Kyle Lowry was also amazing defensively, because he was almost playing free safety on the backside. And whenever they threw the backside pass, he was able to close out in time where they weren't getting the shot they needed.
Yeah, the defense for Toronto really stood out yesterday. And then, of course, I mean, Pascal Siakam's on like a look at me tour. He's been ridiculous so far in these playoffs, and they showed it once again.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument he's been top 15 player in the playoffs so far, top 10. Yeah. Like, he's been that good. just the energy. And I think like the one thing about Siakam is that he's knocking down shots with good defense, especially in the paint. He has like a hot spot right around that block area. If he's on the move and he's getting to that block, he just is really comfortable using the glass to lay it in from whatever angle he's at.
And I know when me and Jack Mino did our OTG player power rankings, we got some shit because we had Pascal Siakam, I think 22nd or 21st in the top 25. We had Kyle Lowry 28th. I think Siakam, especially in the playoffs, has shown that he is a lock to be a top 25 player already in his career.
Yeah, I think he's definitely been way better than Lowry this year in terms of the postseason because Siakam hasn't had a game where he scored 0 points.
Yeah, so. well, that's a big factor in it.
And I think his defense is just versatility. It's not like he's a guy you have to worry about. I think sometimes other players that might be ranked higher, if you have to worry about them defensively or a certain part of their game, they have a really major weakness, it's going to affect the game plan. But Siakam is like, not to say he's a perfect player, but the weaknesses in his game are not that apparent.
Yeah, for sure. And he made Tobias Harris look extremely uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a really big adjustment for Philadelphia going up against a team in Brooklyn who could not match up with them and just didn't have the bodies and the length, now to a team that can match up with them perfectly, and now they can't match up with them on the other end.
Yep, and the big thing that we saw too is Toronto made Philly operate in the half court. Mm-hmm. Philly is actually probably one of my least favorite teams to watch when they're in the half court because there's no movement. They don't know what to do with the basketball. That's a team who needs to be out in transition. So I think Toronto is just in the driver's seat. I think we said Raptors in six on the preview. It feels like almost Raptors in five or after game one.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And I think you mentioned the half court stuff. And I think this is where it goes to bother Philadelphia is they've acquired these players mid-season. So Brett Brown, you know, you want to talk about as a coach. I think it's really hard for any coach to make a complete adjustment to whatever scheme they're running. Now you add in Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. Like, I don't think they're all being utilized at their best possible way. And that's not the same thing against Brett Brown. I think it's just hard to do that during the season.
Yeah. And a little bit off topic. It was seen that Ben Simmons was out clubbing the night before game one. How do you feel about that? Does that matter? Is it, because I know a lot of people have been
that said like that wasn't really a club and it was like a restaurant or it didn't seem as popping. And to, I guess, his defense, I mean, I would prefer my players to be, you know, either hanging out together if they want to go out to a restaurant or whatever. I prefer them to be together before the postseason, but obviously can't control their lives.
Yeah.
But I would prefer him to be inside and getting proper rest. You know, I don't care if you stay up to 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, but it's better for you to be inside than out and about. Yeah. Whatever could happen, you know, at the bar, or God forbid you got into a fight and now all of a sudden it's like impacting you for the next game. And the game was late in the day. So some of it's like, all right, like, what are these guys supposed to do? Go to bed at like 10 o'clock and then wake up at 6 a.m. and they play not for another 12 hours. Like, I kind of understand it. I don't hate it, but I think it was more so on the whole Toronto team, not Ben Simmons being bad.
Yeah. And Ben Simmons I don't think he was terrible, but when he's in the half court, we know what kind of player he is. He's a guy who can't really control the tempo of the game if he's being limited.
Yeah. And I think it also goes to Ben Simmons' roster construction, which you need for around him. Like, you look at the Bucks. We talked about this when you and Jack were here. Like, if he was on the Bucks, I think his situation would be a lot different because he's surrounded by shooters. But now, Joel Embiid's in the post, clocking everything up. Jimmy Butler's not a three-point. You know, he doesn't shoot a ton of threes. J.J. Redick shoots threes. Tobias Harris shoots threes. But that's two out of your five guys. Right. Now all of a sudden, your spacing is pretty trash.
Yeah, the three-point shooting also is what stood out for the Sixers yesterday. That's going to be a major issue because they only got two guys who can really shoot from three.
That Mike Scott injury was really underrated.
Yeah, I actually didn't realize how much that would affect them, but you definitely saw it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he's not an amazing player, but he's solid, and he can give you spacing, especially if you're going to go smaller. I love the lineup they threw at the Nets where they went small and they had Ben Simmons or Mike Scott, whoever, at the center position.
It's smart.
Yeah, especially if Toronto were to play Serge Ibaka, you could get away with that. Against Marc Gasol, it might be a little bit more difficult, but I think it would still be doable.
Yeah.
I guess since we're still here, let's get some – what were your thoughts on Denver and San Antonio?
God, that was – do Game 7s ever have – productive offensive nights? I feel like whenever there's a game seven, you're locking in both teams shooting under 42%. It's going to be a lot of disgusting basketball. Granted, there wasn't a lot of turnovers. That was one positive. Both teams played a clean game of basketball in that sense, but no team could hit shots. Denver was 2 for 20 from three, which is, you know, if they do that against Portland, I don't think they win a game because I think Portland's got more offensive talent than San Antonio, at least from three. It was gritty, you know, and Jokic, shout out to him. He may move in slow-mo, but that is a fantastic center. I don't think I've ever seen a center be a point guard, which is what he is for that Denver team. They completely run their offense through him. I feel bad that DeMar DeRozan couldn't get it going. He started the game 1-for-10. I think he finished like 6-for-18 for 18 points. I mean, he was active defensively. He had a couple nice steals, but the end of the game was one of the worst blunders I've seen since the J.R. Smith situation, where guys just don't know the situation. Obviously, it was loud, and you can see Coach Pop, what was he, like 5 feet on the court yelling, and still LaMarcus Aldridge couldn't hear him. The ending to the game is what stuck out the most, but it was just an awful shooting game for both sides.
Yeah, I feel like if San Antonio gets off to a better start in that game where they don't score, like, what, 4 points in, like, the first 8 minutes of the game, which was just wild.
Being down 13.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing.
And I kind of had this feeling that, like, Denver couldn't push it over the hump and get that 20, 25-point lead that would have, like, sealed the deal early. So San Antonio had a shot. You mentioned DeMar. DeMar had a real opportunity to win the game for San Antonio at the end. He missed a couple shots inside. So I think that really hurt them. And then obviously the whole foul situation. I mean, we're talking about it and we're wondering, everybody on NBA Twitter is like, why didn't you foul? Like, if these people know, how do you not know as a player? And I'm not trying to take shade. Obviously you're in the moment and different things happen, but you guys got to know better. You're down four. You already know after the first possession going down, you're trying to get a 2-for-1 and you miss the first shot, that you should be fouling right after that. You trap for a quick second, you don't get the ball, foul. Like, make it a foul game. This team's inexperienced. There's a chance you could have won the game. I remember last night thinking to myself, like, oh, what's a big deal? But then I thought about it more, like, Denver's never been in this situation. Other than maybe Paul Millsap, a lot of the guys that were on the floor never had to shoot free throws in a game seven that would have sealed the deal. You had a chance to win it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see it live, but like Nick Anderson, the guy I think about for Orlando Magic in that one finals against the Rockets, he missed those two free throws in crunch time, and his, you know, the entire series changed, and Houston ended up sweeping Orlando. And who knows what happens if you put Jokic on the line with, you know, 30 seconds, I think it was like 32 seconds to go. Or 25 seconds to go. Either way, it's a blunder. LaMarcus Aldridge, obviously, I don't know if you saw his post game, what he said. He was just like, yeah, you know, I messed up. He was like, I just didn't foul. I wasn't really, he just lost it.
I don't think it's just on him, though. Like,
I mean, if you look, though, DeRozan's like, yo, foul.
But DeRozan should have just ran and tried to foul him.
Well, I think the issue is DeRozan's guy was right underneath the basket. So I think the fear is I'm going to run out and Jokic is just going to pass over top me. They're going to get an easy layup. But I get it. Yeah, somebody should have stepped up.
You still make the attempt. Like, you're going to lose. You're going to lose whatever. At least you lost trying instead of being like, oh, it's all on LaMarcus Aldridge. It was like a situation where everybody's in a room and you see something bad happen and, like, no one goes to help the person that's suffering. Like, it's just like they're all staring. Like, I get it. But, like, also other guys in the court could have stepped up and ran at him. Like, how many times have we seen that where the first person misses and you have to kind of come over and foul the guy?
Yeah. It was one of those – it was one of the most cringiest 15 to 20 seconds I have seen in a basketball game. Because the J.R. Smith stuff was cringy, but it was more like it happened so fast that it was more like, what the fuck? But this was just like, yo, what are they – like, no one's moving.
At first I thought they were just like, all right, we're going to take the L. We don't deserve to win. We were so bad, we don't even want to steal this game because we suck.
Oh, like, man. Baffling. But again, Jamal Murray hit some big-time shots when they needed him. He wasn't fantastic, I thought, but at least he remained aggressive.
He hit a lot of big shots in the fourth quarter where it mattered. And that one floater, one-foot jumper
ridiculous
thing that he shot, yeah.
Ridiculous. Because actually, in the first quarter, when he had that one sequence where he airballs the three-pointer and then he went to dunk it and he gets stuffed by the rim, that kind of felt like the game it might have been for Jamal Murray. But it goes to show that, again, this guy is just like the ultimate spark plug or the ultimate just hot or cold guy, because in the first half, he wasn't great. And then, like you said, in the fourth quarter, he hit the big shots when they need him. I thought Paul Millsap, I think the veteran leadership of Paul Millsap was crucial for the Denver Nuggets. Didn't have a fantastic game, but I think the fact that you have a guy like that who's been in game sevens before and can settle the ship is huge, because as they showed before the game, Denver didn't have a lot of playoff experience in game sevens. I think it was Paul Millsap with two, and somebody only had like one game. Oh, Isaiah Thomas had one game seven, but what does that matter?
Yeah. So I definitely – Paul Millsap was my series MVP going into it, and I thought he would play a major factor. Obviously, Jokic picked up his game after, you know, the first – but it'll be interesting going in. Obviously, we'll do a preview of that tomorrow. But initially talking about it, I'm interested to see how Portland can defend Jokic and how Denver can defend Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I think – I'm not going to give my prediction, but right now I'm more in favor of Denver despite how we just saw them go seven. Because I think, again, we look about matchups – I think the offensive talent that Denver has matches up slightly better with the fact that Portland doesn't have Nurkic. So yeah. I think Jokic really dominates this series, whereas Aldridge kind of can not limit. We saw what Jokic did. He had 2 triple doubles those final games and a career high 43 or a playoff high 43 points in game 6. But I think it's more of an advantage where Jokic might have even bigger series against Portland.
Especially going against Cantor. Like, yeah. As good as Cantor was against Steven Adams, Jokic is a different beast because he's doing exactly what Cantor sucks at, and that's pulling Cantor out of the paint and forcing him to be a perimeter defender, which he really can't do, and he struggles in that area. So I'm really intrigued by that, and I think Denver benefited so much from actually having a 7-game series. Like, I think a 4-game sweep against a bad team wouldn't have benefited them at all. Like, going against San Antonio, a really experienced team, a great coach in Popovich, a lot of good players. Now they're going against Portland. And Portland isn't 100%. You could make the argument that talent-wise, like, Dame is obviously on a different level than everybody on San Antonio, but overall, talent between San Antonio and Portland isn't that different, where Denver is more talented than both teams.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you look at the offensive threats on Denver, it's double what they have in Portland. I mean, Portland really only has 3 guys who can score probably over 15 points consistently, and that's Lillard, McCollum, and I mean – I don't even know. I guess Cantor would be the guy to average more than 15 points. But again, defensively, he's such a liability. And he's got a bad shoulder injury too. I think that, I mean, how well he pulled it in game 5 early on. He pulled his shoulder. So how does he? Is he at 100%? Is he at like 80%? That could play a factor as well.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued. I feel a lot better about Denver now in the postseason than I did after the first round series, just because they got so much more experience and they have a better feel.
I think adversity, right? It's a part of adversity. Adversity helps you grow. Adversity kind of helps you take steps forward. And Denver had a lot of adversity in this first round series. And for those young guys, I think that's huge to have that, as you mentioned, especially going into a series where, you know, Portland's a gritty team and they play with a chip on their shoulder. So already having some adversity, already having to go through a kind of rugged first round matchup goes well against a team like Portland.
Yeah, it's definitely in. And they obviously pulled the upset in round 1. And now it's like, well, technically, it's not an upset, but I think a lot of people picked OKC to win that series.
I know that we picked OKC in 6.
Yeah, we did. And obviously, Portland came through. And I think a lot of that was Enes Kanter surprising, and then CJ McCollum being a major factor.
Yeah. And of course, Lillard hitting 37-foot shots to win games. You know, no one really predicts those kind of things.
I expected a big series from Dame, but I didn't expect it to be that great. Like, I didn't expect him to be like top 3 player in the postseason great in that series.
I gotta say that performance in game 5 by Damian Lillard might have been the best single game performance I've seen in the playoffs since the game 7 between LeBron and Kyrie against the Warriors. I mean, granted, game 1 against the Warriors last year when LeBron had 51 was great.
I was gonna say, yeah, that, like, one was pretty big.
That's probably up there, but like, I don't know, there was something different about Lillard's. Just like the fact that the shots he was taking, like coming out of halftime and he hit that fadeaway 3 from where he ended up hitting the game winner from, like those spots are pretty much identical. It kind of just set the tone where this guy was, you know, especially the quote comes out the night before that he was sitting there watching Utah and Houston. He's like, I'm sending these fuckers home tomorrow. Like, yo, what? The premeditated murder by Damian Lillard. Yeah,
seriously though, really. And I mean, great job, Westbrook. Way to stir the pot. It really worked out for you.
And his end of season presser was really showing of what Westbrook thinks about his game. The fact he's like, I'm not gonna change anything. I'm just gonna keep shooting. Just like, all right, buddy.
Good luck, OKC.
You hear what Zach Lowe's heard from a executive around the league?
No, I did not.
Apparently, from an executive around the league, told Zach Lowe that Westbrook has the second worst contract in the NBA, only behind John Wall, who's injured.
I think that's a little bit pushing it, but I can understand the perspective in terms of like star players being that bad. Like, his contract is really big and there's nothing proves that he can play efficient basketball or like fit into a system that's championship style.
Yeah.
Maybe everybody's going to look back and be like, KD, you're probably right. You should have left OKC because Westbrook isn't that good.
I always wonder still though, what would have happened if they had somehow beat the Warriors when they were up 3-1? Like, how does that season for them unfold? Do they end up winning the title that year? And then how does, obviously it's a huge what if.
I think they probably do win the championship, but I don't know if they can, like Kevin Durant and Westbrook, have continued success moving forward, just because it's just really hard and they were just really good that year. And like, Westbrook was good, Kevin Durant was just dominant, and then he fell off at the end of that series. So
yeah,
a lot of different factors to play in. I'm interested to see what happens with offseason moves, but that wraps it up for today. We'll hit you guys with a live show tomorrow night before the 8 o'clock game to talk Denver and Portland more in depth. But Corey, always a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for checking us out. iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play.
Peace out, Nuggets.